My dog is actually sitting in here.
Aww.
Chilled out, actually. Like a little sweetheart.
What number is your dog?
Yeah, I was going to ask.
I'm pretty sure he's a, I'm going to say a social two with a one wing, which sort of bums me out that he has a one wing.
That's
really?
Literally me. Yeah, I'm a social two with a one wing.
Nice.
So hard for you, man.
I feel connected to your dog.
Compliance to your super ego must be a bummer.
I'm Richard Clark.
And I'm Bethany Perkins.
We can't stop talking about the Enneagram.
So we decided to start a podcast where we get it all out of our system.
We're not experts.
We're just obsessed.
It's No Chill Enneagram.
A safe space for Enneagram fanatics.
And a really dumb idea for a podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I am a host of the podcast, and I've already said my name in the intro. So I will spend more time saying that I've said my name in the intro than just saying my name again. In order to save time. That makes sense,
right? Good job.
Thanks.
Good job. Great
Bethany,
job.
Bethany, welcome.
Yeah.
We just spent about 45 minutes trying to get this to work.
Yeah.
And we figured it out. We cracked it like a puzzle. It was really fun, right?
Yep.
Okay,
cool. I feel really good about it now.
Sweet. We have a special guest. I say this every episode, but this time, I mean it. I feel
this time, guys, it's really special.
I feel like a late night talk show host, they always do that thing where they say, we have a special guest. Usually I say that, but I really mean it this time. A very special guest. Chris Hiertz. I'm so sorry. Hiertz? Chris
Hiertz.
Chris Hiertz. Most
I'm
of you know.
I'm going to tell you now, Chris, Richard is never going to get that right.
I'm really
That's
bad.
That's okay. I think I was like in fourth grade, I think I was still misspelling it.
Yeah.
You're the author. You're a big deal in the Enneagram world, and you're the author of The Sacred Enneagram, which is like the book everybody's talking about these days, it feels like.
Yeah.
So we were excited when we found out we might be able to get you on. And we were also, I will be honest with you, Chris, we've had a bit of an existential dilemma leading up to this episode, because normally we talk to people who know about as much as we do about the Enneagram. And this time we're talking to someone who probably wants to like set us straight constantly as they're listening to the show. And we can talk about that a little later, but we're excited that you at least agreed to come on the show and even seem to have listened to it before, which is a little terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm super grateful to be included in this. And look, you actually know, you know the most about yourself. And if you're looking through the lens of this teaching and tradition, then you are actually an expert on understanding, right? The gift of, or the gift and the challenges of your own type. So.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm going to add that to our intro. I'm just going to take that.
Yes.
And Chris Hiertz says. And then we'll add that part, excerpt. Chris, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your type and how that plays into what you do? And we'll talk a little bit about that.
All right. So I am dominant in type 8. And, you know, whenever you introduce the Enneagram and you sort of bring 8s forward, or if you have friends who are 8s and they introduce themselves as an 8, this is almost inevitably the response that you always get. It goes something like this. Oh, I used to work with a really unhealthy 8.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And it sort of bums me out, because I'm usually like, no, they were just an 8 and you probably didn't stand up for yourself.
Interesting.
Trying to sort of help folks who land on point 8 on the circle there. Actually make peace with like maybe the too muchness of their own sense of intensity, the intensity they feel about being themselves and maybe the intensity that comes across from them. Mm-hmm. But I would say this, like my type is like all of ours, probably always showing. And in the work that I do, if you sort of sniff it out, you can see I'm I'm picking fights with some of the old language. I'm picking fights with some of the paradigms. I'm picking fights with some of the assumptions around ideas that were maybe put out 40 years ago that were sort of latched on and haven't sort of developed a whole lot since then. And it's been lots of fun.
That is fascinating.
Picking fights is fun.
Yeah, picking fights is like super fun, everyone.
I would never say that.
My stress level is rising as you were talking about that.
Yeah, too.
But so Chris, I want to talk more about the picking fights thing. I think that will be a good fit for our next segment. But before we do that, we have to type reviews. And I think we have just the person to help us figure out what type all of these people writing reviews are. And Chris, you agree that we can probably figure it out based on the iTunes reviews, right?
There's hints. There's hints. Look for the verbs, and I think you'll figure out at least the intelligence centers.
Sweet. Oh, I like okay. that answer. All right.
There's something we can legitimately do here. I am content.
Yeah. Bethany, who's starting? You or me?
I'll start.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, so we have No Chill At All, 5 stars from Caitlin 1067. I've had no chill about the Enneagram for a while now. It's gotten bad. I've made all my friends take tests and have essentially appointed myself their personal Enneagram coach. I'm a 2, classic. Well, I was going to say,
that
has to be a 2.
Yeah.
It's a spiritual discipline for me to get through a conversation with anyone without mentioning it. Anyways, I'm glad to discover like-minded fanatics, that's us, who have created this shame-free space where we are free to delve into the Enneagram without constantly annoying our unsuspecting family and friends. And it goes on. She says, P.S. Any numb can happen, which I agree.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. Chris, do you use any numb yet?
No, I don't.
Will you?
You'll get there.
I'm willing.
Okay.
I'm willing.
That's good.
If you start using AnyNum at workshops and stuff, I will feel like my legacy is secure.
I know.
By the way, we forgot to say this. If you want to be typed by someone like Chris Hewerts, please review our podcast. And maybe they will. Hilarious and lighthearted Enneagram podcast. 5 stars. Love the podcast. Quick question / idea for you guys to talk about on the show. I'm curious about your guys' Enneagram qualifications. I know you're not experts, but I'm curious what books you've read or classes you've taken or whatever. This is just something I'm curious about. Again, I love the show. It never fails to make me laugh. One time I took my community group through the types and we talked to each other. That's my qualification. I read The Road Back
That's
to You
it?
And I was in a room with Ian Krohn and Suzanne Stabile and they helped me figure out my type once.
And I cannot beat that.
So I
went. Okay. Well, you do win, but just, you know, for kicks and giggles, I have read all of the Enneagram Institute website.
Just all of it.
All of it. I'm sure I've read it all by now. I have read The Complete Enneagram, 27 Paths to Greater Self-Knowledge by Beatrice Chestnut. And I've skimmed through, not read cover to cover, The Wisdom of the Enneagram. I started reading the subtitle. How embarrassing. by Riso and Hudson.
Chris, what number do you think this is?
Well, clearly concerned about your competency, so got to be in the 5, 6, or 7. Maybe sentences too meandering for a 6. So right there, splitting hairs between 5s or 7s. What do you think?
I like 5. I thought 5.
I think
off the
5.
Bat.
Yeah.
They want to know qualifications. It feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Then again, they liked it despite not knowing our qualifications. So.
And they started with hilarious, right?
Yeah.
Hilarious and lighthearted. Yeah.
Not sure a lot of 5s.
It is a
very
7.
Many things hilarious if they don't perceive there to be competency behind it.
That's true. But,
oh dang.
Yeah.
It is a 7.
Let's do this next one, Bethany. Go for it.
Okay, get your Enneagram nerd on and laugh. 5 stars from Mrs. Neville. I love this podcast because it's so funny. I laugh out loud on the regular at how they break the rules, i.e. aren't supposed to type other people, whatever, we all do. It's important not to take yourself too seriously, growth mindset and all that. I love the serious comments and helpful thoughts that run throughout each episode in between those hilarious moments. It's not a total waste of time, winky face.
Winky face.
I'm a 3-wing 2, and I'm married to a 7-wing 8 because I know y'all want to know. Okay,
no, we don't need you to tell us. We can figure this out anyway.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I actually was going to say 3.
Nice.
Really?
Because tell they didn't. Why. So, like I said, you can play with the verbs, right? If ever you see the think thought, it's probably a head type. Feel felt, it's a heart type. But of course, the 3 is disconnected from their heart. And so there was no think or thought or feel or felt, but you still sort of picked up a little bit on the heart warmth.
Yeah.
You picked up a little bit on the aggressiveness there of, we're still going to do this. And, you know, the 3 is the aggressive style in the heart center. So the disconnected aggressive heart center type is the 3.
Wow.
Man, we need to outsource this whole segment.
Yeah, we do.
Chris.
Let's
I'm going to do
record the rest of the issues that we have.
I really generally don't like the type folks, but like I said, you just look for the verbs.
We have a giant disclaimer at the beginning of everything we do on the show anyway. So the last one is short, so I'm going to read it. So it's just Wowie by MT77738. 5 stars. Love this podcast. I'm completely loyal to it, and I trust everything they say.
Oh,
kind of easy, I think.
Yeah.
I kind of want to do a negative review with Chris on the show. Can we do
Ooh,
that?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No, you don't get negative reviews.
Okay, well, how about this one from Eric? I should not read their username. That's mean. But it just says, rating Enneagram types? Seriously? 1 star. That was lame, not edifying, or even constructive. One, right?
Yeah.
Maybe a 5. Is everybody bummed out now?
That was lame, not edifying, or even constructive.
No verbs, just an is in there.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's an observation, not a judgment that they're making. And so maybe it's not a critique.
That seems right.
And you even have to know this, like the 1-star reviews, if you get them,
mm-hmm.
It's, and the 5-star reviews too, also, right? This is a lot of, we're always projecting the good and the bad. So
yes.
It's what's unreconciled in us in both extremes.
Yeah.
Compassion for the 1-star review writers.
I like it. We feel compassion for you, 1-star review writers. We know you're still listening because you can't help yourself. All right. Our next segment is called The Enneagram is So Hot Right Now. Chris, how long have you been into the Enneagram?
Well, I learned it almost 20 years ago in the slums of Cambodia. And as you can imagine, somebody who's an 8, it just bummed me out super hard because I was messing with the guy who taught it to me and was like, man, you can't tell me these things about myself. So I've sort of been in and out of it. Like it took a few years for me to really just sort of say yes. But yeah, it's been about 20 years we've been kicking this around.
So it has been, so you have an amazing Enneagram origin story that definitely doesn't involve it becoming a trend and you being like, oh, all my friends like
catching
this.
Catching on to it. And yeah.
So what has it been like to look around and see this thing become like a big deal and people like us hijack it into their own things and there's dog GIFs that are typed on the internet? It's got to infuriate you, right? Especially as
No. I mean, it's great, actually. I mean, I'll say this. I'll say when I first learned it, I was, like I said, I was in the slums in Cambodia with this friend. I was flying back to the States. I stopped in Long Beach at a buddy's spot just to sort of get over some jet lag and to see some friends in Southern California. I got on my friend's laptop, and back then there wasn't a lot of online tests. I took as many as I could. I sort of threw them in a spreadsheet and averaged them out and sent it back to this guy in Phnom Penh. He's like, mate, you're doing it wrong. He sort of helped me suss it out. Well, I get back to Omaha where I live, and my spiritual director, who's since passed, but him and his wife bought me the Wisdom of the Enneagram. So 20 years ago, I was let's say a little bit more theologically conservative, mm-hmm. and started flipping through that, and some of the inner spiritual language weirded me out. Mm-hmm. So I brought it back to this sort of, we used to call this bookstore Anything Goes, because it was sort of like Anything Goes. I took it back to Anything Goes, and y'all, within like 6 months, three different people had bought that book for me, and three different times I brought it back, right? So,
oh my gosh,
resisting the bend of the universe towards this.
That's amazing.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And so I do have a sort of conflicted origin story myself with it, but I think that was important for me, because I think number one, like, this is going to find you right on time, and it's going to mm-hmm. find you ready for it. And I'm not sort of an any evangelist. Like, you don't have to know your type today. It's there for you as a support. And so what my sense is right now, like, it's Enya everywhere. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sort of embarrassed to tell you all the different folks that I'm recording things for, sending things to. But one of them is something called MOPS. I think it's adults who care for little kids.
Yeah, I know MOPS. Yeah.
Mothers of preschoolers.
It's like super mainstream all of a sudden. And yeah. and I guess like my sense is that in the evolution of our human consciousness and what we need to sort of make sense of the rapidly changing world we're part of, this mm-hmm. is going to give us tools. This is going to give us roadmaps, right? As, mm-hmm. as we become more comfortable exploring the contours of our egos, the Enneagram actually helps describe the shape of your ego. And so folks with huge egos are going to be drawn to this. And I think in an age of social media where everybody's tricking out who they think they are by mm-hmm. sort of false branding, this is right on time. Like, we need something like this to help us tell the truth to ourselves about who we really are, about who we've forgotten that we've always been. So it makes sense.
You think it's good? You think it's a good thing that the Enneagram is so hot right now?
I think it can be. I think it's unfortunate if people sort of think like this is new, or this is the newest thing, or like,
yeah, you
know, the new Myers-Briggs or something.
Yeah. Or like they just discovered this, because, you know, the International Enneagram Association is having their 25th global conference next summer. And, you know, they do these global events, and one in Europe, one in South America, one in North America every year. And 25 years into it, it's not new. It's just news to a certain mm-hmm. population of a kind of person who, you know, 15, 20 years ago wouldn't have actually had the capacity to approach this with a sense of valuing it for what it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. Do you have any pet peeves about this new wave of Enneagram fanaticism?
No, I think we're all, I think we're all stumbling forward in this. I think we're all sort of wading through some murky waters. And yeah, there's some folks who've been around a little bit longer, and there's some folks who bent their brains a little bit harder on this than some of the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But really, if you know the sort of at least modern history of this, we're really only working with an overlay that's about 40 or 45 years old, right? So this Enneagram of personality is sort of the newest way of filtering something through the teaching. And if we're only 40 or 45 years into this, then like, this is actually a really exciting time. Like, this is a time of there's so much possibility for discovery and uncovering things and contributing to sort of where this is headed. You know, the bummer, maybe the only bummer is, you know, in the early 1970s, Claudio Naranjo, the Chilean Gestalt therapist who was sort of tricking out Enneatypes in his backyard with grad students at Berkeley, sort of gifted this to us.
That was an amazing sentence.
Yeah, it was.
And like, certainly Don Riso, Helen Palmer, there's a few of those folks then in the 70s and 80s who sort of built off of what Naranjo gifted us. Mm-hmm. And I guess the real bummer is there's not been a ton, let's say, of original work that hasn't been a regurgitation of what Don and then Russ put together, and Helen and Dr. David Daniels have put together. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually grateful for all the chatter and the noise, because hopefully what it's doing is creating the possibility of moving this teaching forward, helping us continue to see it sort of reveal itself, right?
Chris, let's make a case for eights. That's our next segment. So one of the things that happened, I don't know if you listened to our number one episode. If you did, we are a little, we feel shame right now if you did listen to it. But one of the things we did was we ranked the enneatypes from best to worst. But what happened was eights were last, and we are sorry.
We are sorry. Please forgive us.
I
think eights are going to be okay with that.
It kind of turned out to where the bottom numbers were the numbers you would expect that wouldn't care, right? Like eights and sevens and threes, I think, were down there.
And
it was, of course, like an exercise in projection. It's really more about us than it is about the numbers themselves. It was a fun exercise, but we need obviously to redeem eights on this episode. So help us do that. Tell us what is great about being an eight.
Yeah, that's a great question. I will say this. I think because of my religious and social conditioning, there was a lot, and I guess this would be true for most of the types, probably sevens being the exception, that we sort of didn't like in our types, or how our types are described, or how our types were sort of cliched and caricatured out. But I would say this: over the past few years, I've really, really been trying to grow in compassion for all the types. And it was actually type ones who helped me start this. By the time I get to type eight myself, it's like I'm sort of compassion fatigued for all the other nine or the other eight types. Uh-huh. And I still find myself being a little critical here. For me, the real trick is this: if you know much about the Enneagram's so-called childhood wounds, I think that's the starting point for me in all my conversations with types and in all my conversations with finding compassion for types. And the eights, of course, just like the fives and the twos, are rejection types. And the irony is it's actually that we reject the very thing that we need, right? And so eights, you probably know all this. These are the basics, but there's this fear of being destroyed, or this sort of concern about not being in control. And so even as little kids, eights exerted that sense of control. Well, in this rejection posture, it was really towards the nurturing caregiver. And this is because, again, I mean, this is some of the basics, but it's because as a heart repressed center, we don't know what to do with our feelings. We don't know what to think about our emotions. And so when this nurturing caregiver was offering their heart to us, it felt like control. And in some cases, it maybe felt manipulative. And so we resisted it. We rejected it. We pushed away on it. And that pushing against that experience of resistance became a form of exerting control, which for eights was a counterpoint to that fear. And so it helped us feel a little bit more alive. Now you can see how this plays out in relationships, and so it can be harmful, it can be painful, and I think this is where we have to start with eights. It's we all want to be loved. This is what the Enneagram shows us. We suffer the inability to be loved. We suffer the loss of love in nine different ways. But for eights, there's especially this hunger for connection, for belonging that we won't let ourselves experience, or we won't let ourselves get in touch with. And so we double down on this. And you know, eights hate bullies, but we're the biggest bully. And that's because we want to be up the part of ourself that seems vulnerable, or anything that would invite that vulnerability forward. There's also something about a loss of part of our childhood, right? And you hear this, you hear that eights had to, or there was an acceleration, let's say, of part of the childhood. And my sense is what happens to eights, when you can recognize that, when you can isolate that experience of what part of your childhood didn't you really fully experience, you actually see how that inner child is still with you, that the inner child is still there. And this is why, you know, eights with puppies, eights with children, eights with anything mm-hmm. they perceive to be vulnerable or marginalized, mm-hmm. relax. It's because I don't have to fight against that vulnerability. In fact, that vulnerability becomes a mirror to the vulnerability I won't let myself see inside myself.
Yeah.
So I had to sort of really make peace with the inner child. I had to really make peace with this resistance to not wanting to be vulnerable. And I say this a lot, right? I use transparency as a hustle for vulnerability. I don't want to tell you all the terrible things I've done in my life, but if I do, and you might think we're close, then great.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Form of exerting control. But you know this, you know that the word vulnerable comes from the Latin word for wound, and to be vulnerable means to be woundable. And for an eight to really open themselves up to that point, to submit in relationship, to actually access their heart, you start to see some really, really beautiful tenderness there.
So you're saying like eights relate best to vulnerable people?
I think eights relate to vulnerability as, I think when we see it, it's a mirror to showing us something in ourselves that we generally don't see, something that we park in the shadow, something that we're uncomfortable with internally. And so when we see somebody wearing vulnerability, fluent in vulnerability, it's as if it's sort of giving us
permission,
permission, something sweet about that. Now, yes, there's a tenacity, there's a ruthlessness, there's a drive, in the eight. These are the initiating types. This is, you know, it's the reactive, conflict avoidance style. So eights have to discharge what's frustrating them. And if you're not an eight, that doesn't really feel like a conflict avoidance style. It feels like you're antagonizing conflict. But even all of that comes from these tender little bits inside of each of us that we're still trying to piece together, that we're still trying to make
sense. It's really funny because I feel like Bethany and I both have really close, well, maybe not close, at least in my part. I'm not super close to eights, but I like a lot of eights. Like I have eights in my life that I really like and appreciate. And I wonder if it's that vulnerability piece that's the reason. Like, I think, Bethany, you and I are both vulnerable people. You know?
I'm a wounded animal.
We're both wounded animals in sort of obvious ways, I think, sometimes. We both have a hard time, like, not talking outwardly about our lives. Well, maybe. But that is something that I think helps my relationships with eights. And I think, like, to help a little bit with Chris, you just said a lot of really intense things about eights that really sounded more sad than anything to me. But one of the things I appreciate about eights is their reaction to that vulnerability often is to protect that person in one way or another.
Yes, I was gonna
or to
say
at
that.
Least like have make you feel like they're on your side, right? And that is something I really appreciate.
Yeah. And all of these are the cycles of what we're doing internally that we project externally. So when you see the eight sort of assuming that protective position of the vulnerable, it's because they've tried to protect their own vulnerability. They've got that locked down. They know how to do that for themselves, right?
Yeah.
So this is where you have to really keep a lot of eights in check. Like if you see eights, and look, I was in a humanitarian organization for 20 years, and I want to think that I was actually doing good work in the world, but I also have to frequently evaluate that, wondering, was I actually out there working with kids and women who had been trafficked into the sex trade, working with kids who had been orphaned because of AIDS, because I wanted to project my care for vulnerability outside of myself rather than practice it with myself.
Yeah. That is the weirdest thing about the Enneagram, is it helps you see how really good traits people have are often really bad signs, you know, like really, like they actually mean something a little bit dark or sad about that person. And it's more about how their wounds are playing out in front of us. Which is weird to think about. And weirder to experience.
That also gives us compassion.
Definitely. So,
and look, what you were both saying a second ago, you're actually right. Like eights and twos and fives, of course, you know this, sort of have a natural affinity with one another. This is one of the groupings of the harmony triads. Like I said, this is the rejection types of the dominant affect groups. And eights and twos in particular, right? Eights rejected that nurturing caregiver. Twos felt rejected by that protective caregiver. And so eights double down on a protective approach to living in the world, and twos double down on a nurturing approach. And that can be a really healthy relationship, or that just can lead to the most toxic fusion of all relationships. So you see a lot of eights and twos land together. Eights and fours, that's a fun one because, you know, really why eights and fours, when they connect and they do naturally connect, they generally connect on a subconscious level because of their relationship to the rules, right? Fours are like, these rules don't apply to me. These were written for the other eight types. And eights are just like, show me the rules because I'm going to break them all.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of curious respect that eights and fours sort of side eye in each other as it relates to structure, rules, and the world is organized.
Wow.
I'm really like analyzing my relationship with eights in my life right now. And everything that you're saying makes so much sense. One of my eight friends in particular, she is like several years older than me. She was my youth leader when I was in middle school. And she just kind of like chose me and my family as well. And so I've known her for over a decade. And she's just like an older sister to me. And she is a hardcore eight, but like has this really compassionate, empathetic, protective, vulnerable side. And actually, she's a farmer. So she takes care of animals and plants for a living. And so, yeah, all of that just makes so much sense.
And twos, you, I mean, I hate to say this, I don't want to state the obvious, but part of the social gift and the role that you play really is helping the other eight types access their hearts. Fours, part of your social gift, part of the role you play is helping us translate our emotions. And I think in particular, you know, fours and twos, you really probably are some of the midwives to helping eights sort of come to terms with that. Right. So those can be really, really helpful relationships if you can stay in them.
I like that. I just want to say we have a segment we're not doing. And I'm going to make you explain why, Chris, if you're okay with that, because I think it's insightful. So we had a segment called 9 Ways to Hurt Someone's Feelings.
Yeah.
It was going to be like, because, you know, you're an eight and eights probably just like bulldoze people sometimes on accident and know people's buttons. And so what are 9 things that, you know, probably should not do to
with the subtext of it being we're not gonna do these things. We're not gonna go out there and hurt people's feelings.
But I just wanted to give you a chance to like talk about why that's a terrible idea.
Well, we need to repent of our idea.
It's so nice of you to say that maybe eights accidentally hurt folks' feelings when in fact a lot of eights are pretty intentional about the ways that they poke and prod and challenge. I mean, I sort of joke around, but it's not always a joke. It's like sass and hassle. These are two of my love languages. Like, and you know, when you're unaware of that, that's actually not a love language for most people. It's a bummer.
Right.
I understand. Like, this is really typical of eights. Like, if you have friends in your life who are eights, if you're an eight, if there are eights out there that you try to avoid, it is because we do find the stress fractures and press on them, and it can be a sport to us. And you know, the subconscious, I'll say this, that if you can observe your three levels of consciousness, right, your conscious mind, your thoughts, your what you think about, what you sort of your talking points, just sort of what's floating around there in the head, your subconscious, your memories, your emotions, your feelings, all these things that are triggered. And then your unconscious, right? These compulsions, right? In the Enneagram world, you'd probably say this is where your instincts sort of rest. Mm-hmm. On a subconscious level, I think a lot of eights, when they're picking fights, are doing this to build trust. When they're picking fights and they're being a little aggressive or combative, they're trying to see how long somebody's going to stay with them, stay in it. I sort of say it's like we're stomping on the ice between two people to see how thick it is. And if I can break the ice with being a little bit of a punk, being a little abrasive, being a little inappropriate, fabulous. That was efficient. We knocked that out. Because, yes, 3, 6, 10 months later, it's actually going to be something worse. It's going to hurt you more. And you know, if fours are self-abandoning and want to sort of prove that out in this sort of withdrawal that they have in some of the relationships, eights feel betrayed, even if it's not betrayal, because trust is such an important aspect to the bonding of relationships. And if you don't stay in it with me, it feels like a betrayal, even if I'm the one that pushed you away, even if I'm that tested, how long is it going to be before the betrayal shows up? So you're, I get it. I get like, let's find the nine ways to mess with folks. Let's find the nine ways that eights can provoke the other types or what, but I'm just feeling like what's unhelpful about that is that maybe is a doubling down on the unhelpful caricature of, look, there's actually a reason that some eights act out like that.
Yeah.
Some eights who've never really been aware of this, who don't have the permission to actually explore the contours of their own vulnerability, or for folks who just feel like, man, eights are the worst people out there. And yes, a lot of them are. Again, there just has to be a different path to finding compassion.
I and love so, that the only number we actually covered in this segment was eight. Like we... we pretty much covered how to hurt an eight's feelings in your explanation there, which is pretty good.
Right. I sort of saw that actually. I was like, I wonder how many eights would actually say, oh, and fight back even against the sort of segment title as a way of covering up sort of their own pain of being misunderstood.
Mm-hmm. All right. Our next segment is called, so this is, this is, I think really important for us, Chris. We've been looking forward to this. Yeah. It's called Help Us Become Enneagram Experts in the next few minutes. Mm. So we need you to tell us exactly the things we need to know to become Enneagram experts. And then like, can you give us a certificate or something at the end of this podcast?
Oh man, you actually just pressed on the stress fracture of the professional landscaped in the Enneagram world, right? I mean, I get that question, that call, that email a few times every month. Like, where do I train? Where do I certify? How do I sort of prove my fluency or understanding of the tool? And then how do I earn the credibility that I want to use this professionally? And that's a bummer that we've sort of done that even within this tradition, right? Because it was an oral tradition for a while. It was a process teaching for a while. It wasn't about personality, like I said, until 40 or 45 years ago. And so if we're really at the outset, at the birth of a new way of reading what's sort of contained within the symbol, we're all learners. We're all still finding our way. So, you know, the best work that we can all do is just work with what this teaching has to show us towards our own sense of becoming and our own sense of remembering. And
okay, I'm writing that down.
I am too, actually. I have my notes out in my phone.
Well, this is
just
the thing.
If check you remember that off tomorrow, and then I'll be set.
The beginning of this, when Naranjo was building out the Enneatypes with those students in 1971, 72, and 73. If you remember the story, he actually had all those students sign a contract of reserve. It was essentially an agreement that they wouldn't teach it until he had given them permission to teach
it. Please don't start a podcast right now.
That's why we're asking for your permission, Chris.
No, but I mean, I get why he did that, because as soon as this teaching finds you, you do want to sort of load your love gun and become the grace sniper for everyone in your life who still needs to awaken.
Yeah.
And I think what Naranjo is saying is, look, before you go home and mess with your partner or put this on your kids, or before you go to work and start sizing people up, work on yourself and really let that sort of be the canvas. Let that be the compassionate sketch of possibilities of who you can become. And so I think what you're doing, like what you had said earlier, it's like you're doing just what you need to do. It's not to fuel narcissism, but it boils down to this. If we can't self-observe, we can't self-correct. And my sense is we all want to be the a better version of ourselves. maybe for the people in our lives, maybe for our professional ambitions, but we have to also love ourselves and want this for ourselves. And so I think that's how you become the expert.
Love ourselves.
Yeah.
I really am like so interested in what you're saying right now, because I want to like keep doing Enneagram things. Like I want to learn more. And actually recently somebody kind of asked me like, hey, would you be able to come like teach this group on the Enneagram? And I was like, no, I can't. Like I have no qualifications, but at some point I would like to be able to do something like that. And so I just don't know where to start or what the end goal should be.
Yeah. So. But if you're with a group of folks who are on a similar path or a similar journey, it's like any conversation with trusted conversation partners. I mean, it's like do you have to go to seminary to facilitate a Bible study? Like,
right.
How long do you have to be sober to actually speak up in a 12-step group?
Right.
If we take ourselves too seriously, I think we've missed the point.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, because I find some of the most fruitful Enneagram work in my life takes place among really close friends who are just like talking, right? Mm-hmm. And they're using the Enneagram as a way of grabbing on the handles about ways to talk about themselves and each other in relation to themselves. And that in fact, that's a big part. And we've talked about this on the podcast before. That's a big part of what inspired this podcast, is like doing that sort of in public, but in a way that is not prescriptive, right?
So, and if you're going to, not you two, I'm saying about your podcast, I'm saying for anybody who's listening to this, who feels that compulsion to share this or to work this out in groups or to move forward with how do I grow in my understanding of the tool and how can I be generous with the tool? It's just being sensitive. I think of it like this. It's being sensitive to the limits of what you understand and having the humility to realize like I have to appeal beyond the scope of my exposure to this. I sometimes think of it like this, right? I use this infrequently and loosely with my former community, and it was fine. It helped us understand ourselves a little bit, helped us understand the people we were working with a little bit better. But as I started to sort of approach understanding type through the lens of the so-called childhood wounds, and I actually don't think they're real wounds. I actually think it's a sensitivity to a confirmation bias of the type that we were born with. I started to realize, look, I'm starting to tinker around with some really delicate parts of people's sense of self. And yes, sometimes pastoral counseling's fine. Get at it. But some of us need a psychotherapist. And that's when I think we have to have the humility to know, like, all right, I've ran as far as my tether or my leash here is going to allow for.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's appeal beyond when that's the point, when that's the case. But it's a long leash.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Mm. So I think what I've got down is number one, we have to love ourselves. I will never be able to pull that off. So, and number two is be sensitive to the limits of what you understand. I've got that. I've got that down.
I think I can do
so
that.
One
part
out of two ain't bad.
Pretty solid. Yeah.
All right. The next segment is called Chris Take the Wheel. Chris, you don't know what this is, but I'm going to explain it to you. Eights, my understanding of eights is they like control, or they prefer to be in control. My assumption is that the entire time you've been on this podcast, you've been like anxious to grab the wheel and like fix it or take control of it. So I'm just curious, like, if this were your podcast, what would you do with it and how would you change it?
Oh man. So you are right. Eights, we love to be in control, and you know this with the eights in your life. When we don't feel that we're in control, even of small aspects or corners of our life, that's when we act out. That's when we start to sort of store our somatic stresses in our body. That's when we our vision becomes convoluted, let's say. But I don't know. Like, I've actually this has been a lot of fun. I don't know what I would do differently here with what y'all are up to and where the conversation's going.
Wow.
You have to do
something. I feel so good right now.
You have to do something, Chris. You can't cop out. You have to choose something. This okay, fine. You're an eight. Take it. Go for it.
Yeah.
You can have all the power here. We don't even care. Yeah. We'll
do you want to plug the book for
up.
The rest of the show? You want to just talk about your book?
I mean, I can talk about my book, but I will say this. I think this is actually really helpful. Like, I do think when you get folks on and sort of kick the tires around type and sort of create sort of the safety for conversations, like I said, you start to sort of pick up the accents of what's behind, let's say, the behaviors. Yeah. You know, that's, I think, largely what the narrative tradition with Dr. David Daniels and Helen Palmer were trying to do is to let people bring type forward and let them become the experts on their own sort of sense of self-observation. Yeah. So I think it's actually a gift of how you handle this.
We need the answer to one question, though. Can sure. we make Enneagram slang happen? Are you cool with that? Is that a possibility that Enneagram slang would be a thing? And do you have a favorite Enneagram slang?
Oh yeah, I'm all for Ennea slang. I'm even all in for lobbying Apple for an Ennea emoji.
Nice. I love that idea.
Yeah, me too.
Super Ennea legit. Uh-huh. But I don't know that I'm like super, super dialed into what the hottest slang is.
You don't know what the cool Ennea kids are saying?
Enneanum is the hottest slang right now. Yeah.
That's it. That's burning through the webs, huh?
I really did use Enneanum the other night with my roommate, and she listens to this podcast, and she just looked at me and was like, Enneanum? And I was like, yeah, I believe in this, okay? We're making it happen.
I like it. What's the other one? I mean, Enneafam has caught on, I feel like.
Yeah.
So that's good.
That's good. Somebody used to bring a new one to the table. Somebody, I was in a Twitter conversation with a five, and she said something like, look at me, I'm five-splaining relationships to you. And I was like, five-splaining, that's a good one. I will definitely probably use that.
That is good.
Yeah, that's a good one. I often use eight hole.
Oh man, that's so good.
That is so funny.
Talk about unhelpful stereotypes. Jeez.
Right. Right.
That's a good one though. Man.
Oh, boy.
Okay, we have one more segment that usually we ask our guests what they need help with in their lives and give them life advice through the lens of the Enneagram because we love ourselves and
It's absurd, but we just do it.
And we understand the limitations of our own, what we understand.
Yes.
But in this case, we think you do those two things better than us. And so we're going to ask for you to give us life advice.
Oh, no.
And let's just shoot for like 4 or 5 minutes a piece. And Bethany, you can start.
Okay. Here I go. Here's the problem. I really had to narrow down my problems, but I think I've narrowed it down pretty well. How do you suggest that I, as a two, can get more in touch with what I need faster? Because I have, it's just a recurring event in my life where I realize, gosh, I'm not doing so well. I'm pretty angsty and sad right now. What's going on? And then at that point, like a week or two later, I examine maybe what my needs are that I'm not addressing.
Mm.
So do you have advice for me?
Well, I mean, I don't want to be cliche. I do think like the best advice is just listening to yourself, right? You already know what we need. And so, I mean, so even in how you frame that question, it's like you sort of are showing yourself the pain that I think a lot of twos suffer, which is the pain of denial, right? And so this is where, let's say, the traditional language that Ichaso used for the nine passions is a little off, right? For the two, they call that pride. And it's not that mm-hmm. your twos are arrogant. It's not that you're proud people. Mm-hmm. It's first and foremost this denial, and it's denying your humanity. It's denying your needs. It's denying your own strength. It's denying your self-assertion. It's denying giving yourself permission to receive the very things that you want. And so there's mm-hmm. a suffering in that denial. Secondly, I think it's presumption. And you hear this from a lot of twos. It's, I wish you would have thought of me, or you could have, I would have loved to have been included in that. Or yeah. didn't you know I liked those things? And the presumption is this. It's that you know how to love people so well that you assume we know how to love you back.
Mm-hmm.
So that presumption is really the misstep. It's the misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. And so for twos, they suffer that presumption, because if you know it, if you get it, if it's so clear to you, why isn't it clear to us?
Yeah.
And this is, again, where really twos are invited to just sort of own their strength and to step into that and show us how to love. We're going to learn it by watching you, but for the two, I think the sort of third way that we see this notion of pride sort of triangulated on themselves is in this experience of self-abnegation, right? Giving parts of yourself away at your own expense, and then trying to convince yourself that that was loving, or that you're doing the right thing. And really it's just another way of fueling your own suffering. It's another way of sort of allowing your pain to be muted but not healed. And
mm-hmm.
and so I think for twos in particular, it's asking for what you want. It's not yeah. feeling guilty or ashamed of and receiving it, and it's showing us how to love you. And this is a bummer, man. A lot of twos will just take what they get. They'll just take what we mm-hmm. give, and then they'll try to convince yeah. themselves that that's enough. And yes. you're not letting us off the hook. You're actually enabling us to be bad friends, bad partners. Mm. So that's a bummer for twos. It feels like it's too much responsibility on the two to show the way.
So the answer is that's a bummer.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
No, I have in my notes, listen to yourself. Ask for what you want. Don't feel shame.
So here's my problem. I have two phases in my life, two seasons that I oscillate between wildly. And this is a uniquely four-wing three problem, I think. I oscillate between sort of total laziness and then having like 14 passion projects or things that I'm investing myself into at once. And I find it very hard to mediate or moderate between those two phases. And so right now my season is very much like, I am very busy, probably too busy, and I like feel committed to a lot of these things that I like can't stop at this point. And so I need to know like how to sort through my priorities, and also how to keep my passions in check, so that I'm not constantly creating things that I find myself stuck in. And not stuck in like a bad sense, like I love doing them. This podcast is an example, but stuck in the sense of like, they're so good and a part of me that I can't imagine my life without them. Right. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, so look, whenever I do workshops, it's always Q and R. It's never Q and A, because it's just the response. It's never the answer.
Sure.
Yeah.
But the response again is, I mean, you're already showing, even in how you're framing this, that you have the access to what it is that's going to bring you back to that rooted place, that grounded place, that centered place, right? I mean, for the fours, like what you're describing is so, I don't want to say typical, and I don't want to say common, because there's nothing typical or common about any four. Mm. Okay.
Tell me about it.
Right. But let's say this, let's say it's understandable, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because there's this hunger that sort of feels like a physical kind of yearning in the body of the four, for the things that they want. And so all these 14 things that are driving you, or that are keeping you curious or fueling you, there's probably something that if you set all those things on the table and looked at them, would maybe like a consolation sort of draw out what it is that you're reaching for, that you feel is missing in your life. Look, it's not missing in your life. It's right there. And when you put all these 14 things down there, you're going to see what they all add up to. And it will show you the meaning that you want. And this is one of the gifts of the, you actually help us draw meaning out of the insignificant and the ordinary and the mundane. So this is part of your work. What's your, it's your, I mean, not you, but I'm saying it could be you, but for fours, it's part of your created purpose for being. This is what we need from you all.
Meaning.
Is that what you're referring
to? Yeah.
Yeah. And actually it's the ascribing of the meaning that's already there.
Yeah.
Right. It's not earning it. It's not sort of building it out. It's just seeing that it was always maybe hidden, but still present. The things that you may feel unmotivated about, you know, my sense is for a lot of fours, this is the flip side of that. This is the other pendulum swing of, I'm not finding meaning in these things at all. Yep. And in fact, it's creating a vacuum or a void, or it's sucking the life out of me. And again, it's the same answer. It's learning to see the gift, the beauty. It's learning to find the gratitude in what is. I heard this quote the other day, and I thought, man, this is such a beautiful little line for fours, but it went something like, gratitude actually helps a little bit be enough, right? And it's like, that's it. I just think it's finding that place where you can receive the little and the spacious, the joy and the suffering, and seeing the gift in it.
Bethany, I don't know about you, but I feel deep regret for not just doing life advice the whole episode.
Right? I'm sitting here like, I wish we could do this for every single number. This is so beneficial for you and I.
Totally is. Yeah. Sorry, every other number.
This has been No Chill Enneagram. It is hosted and produced by Richard Clark and Bethany Perkins. Edited by Richard Clark. Theme music is Max Flashback by Leah Rosevere. Music for Typing Reviews is 80s Interlude by Fannis. Our amazing logo and most of our awesome Instagram illustrations are by Matt Metcalf.
If you're in the heart triad, share this podcast with your friends and bond with them over how much you love it. If you're in the head triad, share all of your deep thoughts about each episode with us on social media. If you're in the gut triad, your gut is telling you to subscribe to this podcast and give it a 5-star review. You should listen. Whatever type you are, leave us a review on iTunes and follow us on social media. We are at No Chill Enneapod on Twitter and at No Chill Enneagram on Instagram.